from the food court at Mall of America, where there's a smell of donuts and depression. It's Toucher and Rich, presented by Plymouth Rock Assurance on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
With respect to the balls, and that there was obviously an issue with the balls.
I don't think anybody knew there was an issue with the balls.
To me, those balls are perfect. I can only speak for myself. I don't want anyone touching the balls. Rubbing the balls. To me, those balls are perfect. Some guys like them round, and some guys like them thin. Some guys like old balls, new balls. They're all different, so you gotta feel them, and you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. I choose the balls I want. You know, I grip it, I grab it, I feel the lace, I feel the leather. I wouldn't want anyone touching the balls. I would zip those things up and lock them away. Some days one ball may feel good, the next day it may not. I want to be very familiar with the equipment that I'm using. This is a crisis. No one's dying, but this is a very important thing. Because to me, those balls are perfect. I don't want to speak for myself. I don't want anyone touching the balls, rubbing the balls. To me, those balls are perfect. Some guys like them round, and some guys like them thin. Some guys like old balls, new balls. They're all different, so you gotta feel them, and you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. You gotta feel them, and you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. You gotta feel them, then you gotta squeeze them. To me, those balls are all perfect. You know, I grip it, I grab it, I grab it, I grip it. To me, those balls are all perfect. Zip those things up, zip those up, and lock them away. To me, those balls are all perfect.
Like I said, I had no... Yeah.
Everyone lives happy.
98.5 Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. We're here thanks to Plymouth Rock Assurance. And this hour of the Toucher and Rich radio program is brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. I see that Rich has brought over a lovely young woman.
Yes, we have another. I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Leslie.
Leslie, thank you for joining us. And Leslie, are you a mall walker this morning?
Absolutely.
Nice. Is it now? How long have you been walking the Mall of America? Like when did you start doing it? How many years ago?
Since they opened.
Now, this opened a while back, too, right?
About 26 years ago, last time the Super Bowl came to town.
Oh, that's impossible. You must have been in diapers when you first started walking this thing. That's right. I'm a little bit of a Casanova. Don't worry about it, but I'm speaking the truth.
That's right, right. Well, who are you going to be? Are you a Vikings fan?
I am a fair-weather Vikings fan.
That's fine. Yeah, fine. I mean, listen, you know, it's tough to root for a team when they're not winning, but this year they definitely were.
First game I watched this season had an exciting last 10 seconds.
Are you talking about to get to the Saints?
Yeah, I'm a fair weather fan. Well, I admit it.
Now, so who do you feel most Vikings fans are rooting for in the Super Bowl?
Patriots.
The Patriots.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, it's been mixed. As a matter of fact, I thought it was going to be most people rooting for the Patriots because that's the way it was. Like, at media day, everyone was booing the Eagles. Mm-hmm. But now it's been very strange. Well, we have two special guests with us, too, that I want to introduce you to. My left, we have a gentleman by the name of Dustin Pedroia. He plays for the Boston Red Sox. And next to him, another ex-member of the Boston Red Sox, Kurt Schilling, is sitting to his left. Would you guys like to say hello to a local?
Well, like I already said, I find you to be a lovely young woman. Who'd you vote for?
That is my business and not yours.
So the answer is Trump because you look like a smart lady. You know about what's going on there with the Illuminati and those things, correct?
Lips are sealed.
That's, well, thank God you know that there's a secret government that is controlling everything.
All I know is that I got a tax cut raise.
That's right.
That's going to make me rich.
Well, listen, that's the ideal, is that then hopefully, you know, the Illuminati doesn't pull the... You don't believe in global warming, correct?
Okay, so Kurt Schilling, well, enough
not today.
We have also...
It's so cold here. That disproves it, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, I like you. I like you.
All right, and then to his right.
Do you know the story of my bloody sock?
I don't want to know that
story. No. It's a good story. So I was pitching there in the World Series, and I was all hurt, and then my sock got covered in blood. Mm-hmm. And I talk about it every time I talk to someone. I have to bring it up.
I was fighting my way through the minors at that point.
Yeah, he was just a kid. This kid is just a kid.
That's right.
This is a big nobody.
I'm scrappy though.
Yeah,
he's got a little bit. I'm a little too edgy for this area of the country though.
Yeah, we have another Red Sox legend who's been retired. David Ortiz. He's sitting to your right. Can you say hello, David?
How are you?
Nice to meet you.
Everything okay?
Absolutely.
Seeing my big hits in the World Series. 04, 07.
Probably.
2013.
Like I said, I'm a Fairweather fan, so the last World Series I watched was in 1991, and before that, 1987.
Okay, well, hang on a second. You're always interrupting
you
me, kid. All right, so what happens is, you might not know him as David Ortiz, you might know him as Old Gap Face. Because of that gap in his teeth?
It's a tooth thing. He always teases me about
we used to call him around the clubhouse, good old ugly Gap Face.
Not a nice guy, is
he? We
call him. Don't you think his parents somehow hated him?
You should slap him.
Well,
I know.
He used to play for the Twins.
We're doing three.
Now, he was once accused of using PEDs. Does he look like somebody?
No,
PEDs?
That's all. Yeah,
lost a lot of weight.
Do you think his parents didn't love him because they never fixed that gap in his teeth?
You see what I'm saying?
Do you
have
children?
What I have to deal with.
All right, hang on a second.
I'm a middle school special education teacher, and what we do with this kind of stuff is we ignore it.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
All right,
that's what Kurt's doing.
David, you're doing a nice job of staying calm.
Yeah,
thank you.
And you're doing the Lord's work.
Way to go.
But do you have children?
Yeah.
Okay, if they had a oral situation going on like this, would you fix it?
See?
Did he say something?
It's a simple surgery.
He's very loud.
No. Would you? Because obviously the teachers and I truly believe this. You're underpaid. I think that you are truly doing.
I got a tax cut raise, so I'm good.
Yeah, no, but I'm being dead
serious. Now you're speaking Shell's language.
In all sincerity, I think what you do is absolutely incredible.
Thank you.
And in all sincerity, I mean that. So I'm not teasing you in any way. I'm asking you legitimately. If one of your children unfortunately had that oral situation happening, would you fix it? Because you have beautiful teeth. Did you have orthodontia when
David,
you were a kid?
Yes.
Seriously, if you slap him, I won't call your mom.
All right.
Nobody will.
If he slaps me, I'll bury him. If he slaps me...
Will you go on your podcast and go crazy?
Well, listen, I'll do it and then I'll pick my nose. Like this guy. So
middle school teacher condoning violence.
So, well, listen.
You don't see it that often.
It's been a long winter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
Kurt needs to get out more.
He does.
We called him old big nose, hairy eyebrow, gap face.
Well, thank you. You have been a delight. And finally,
gotta keep that in the clubhouse show.
Yeah, listen,
we call him old dummy.
That's right. Listen, Schilling, he has a big heart. He collects money from people for big donations.
Right.
Now, sometimes he leaves those donations on the side.
I was very involved with the hurricane relief in Houston. I was. And
yes.
That is true.
Yes.
So as much as you might not like
very hands
now,
on. Very hands on with the hurricane, relief down.
But I did do that.
Well, thank you so much. And David Ortiz, is there anything you'd like to say before you leave?
Could you not open your mouth when you say it?
No, I appreciate your support. We'll do something with Kurt later. I can't help it.
He owes the anti-bullying organizations $100,000.
That's what Kurt's known for.
With the kids, I have kids of my own. All I do is teach them. I'm being again honest with you. I think that it's a scourge, and I go out of my way to tell children not to do that. But when confronted as an adult with a bird man, it is very difficult not to say something. And his parents, I mean, they're really...
I'm going to call your mom.
Their parents.
What's her number?
Do you want to call my mom?
I need to call your mom.
Do we have a phone here? We can call my mom.
Yeah.
All right.
Give them the number.
All right.
Let's make it happen.
That's right. You know what? I think you should talk to Kurt Schilling's mom, as a matter of fact. Kurt Schilling's mom is a very delightful person.
Right.
I don't know how Kurt came from her. It is very, very, very strange.
I can't do it.
You can't do it. Okay. Well, you have been a delight. Thank you so much for... And guys, would you like to say thank you? David Ortiz, any last thing you'd like to say?
Thank you very much for stopping by and putting up with this guy. I appreciate
and
it.
And thank you,
you
so
are
much
welcome.
For all, and
you
thank
are
you, sir,
all
Schilling.
Welcome well, in Minnesota all, anytime.
Thank you. And thank you for all you do.
Sorry about Schill's attitude.
Okay. Yeah. My attitude is that she's doing great work. That is my attitude. That is my attitude. Thank you so much for the time.
You stop picking on David.
Thank you so much. It's very nice to meet
appreciate
you.
It.
Have a great one, and I'll take that headset, too. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
Live from Minneapolis on Radio Row.
Wake up.
Toucher and Rich, presented by Plymouth Rock Assurance, on the home of the game, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We are indeed on Media Row in Mall of America, and we are very happy to have with us three-time Super Bowl champion Daryl Moose Johnson. Hello, sir.
Good morning.
I've always wanted to know, how'd you get the name Moose? Where did that come from?
A lot of people thought it followed me from Syracuse, but it actually happened down in Dallas, and it was one of our backup quarterbacks, Babe Laufenberg.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the start of practice, you kind of break off into your individual groups. So you had the wide receivers and the tight ends, and the running backs, the offensive line, the quarterbacks, and then we would come back together for group periods. So we were the running backs were the farthest group away from where we would come together to start the group period, and so we had a long run back in. And I was the tallest, the biggest guy in our group. Even my my backup fullback was, he was 5'11". He was 240 pounds, but he was 5'11". Mm-hmm. So Babe just said, he goes, when you guys come running across the field, you look like a moose walking in a field of deer. So that kind of got kicked around the locker room. And then Brad Sham, who does our radio, started to use it on the radio. And then Troy mentioned it to John Madden one time in a production meeting. And Madden.
And when he
started,
does it.
Yeah, once Madden started calling him. I was not Daryl for the rest of my football career.
Okay, so I've read Boys Will Be Boys, which is one of the great sports books of all time.
Oh, good God.
I love that book.
Factually based. It's like, it was Fire and Fury. It was right up there with
Moose, I could not put that thing down.
They don't say anything bad about you in the whole book. You get out of there unscathed.
Well, when that book came out, did like people who knew you kind of look at you a little different and start asking questions?
You know, this is the God's honest truth. I still don't know where the White House was.
Right.
And I have never read that book. And a lot of people are like, come on, you're so full of it. Just tell us a good story.
Yeah.
You know, I've got good stories, but nothing to do with that book. Well, and I think you need
didn't
to look
even
at,
know where the White House was?
No. I knew it was kind of close
like
to the
over
facility.
The other side of the wall, yeah.
And I believe that, and they don't claim that you did in the book, but one thing that was fascinating in that book was Charles Haley. And how strange he was.
Fascinating and Charles Haley in the same sentence.
Well, fascinating, terrifying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Charles, a couple other adjectives.
So Charles Haley is one of the great football players of all time.
Awesome guy, too.
He's an awesome guy. Was he like a very eccentric man in the locker room and when he was around?
Yes. Yes. We would actually say, hey, be careful. Charles is off his meds today. And this is, you know, we did it as a joke, but, you know, Charles really struggled with his bipolar condition. And he's a much different guy today. And he was, you know, his back was bad. But Charles is one of the greatest guys you'll ever meet. He'll do anything for you. He's been great with my son. You know, we would play flag football growing up and I would coach him. But I was always on the road. When they were playing their games because of the broadcasting. So I had my assistant coach do the game, and Charles would come by, you know, from time to time and give the guys a pep talk, and he's just awesome. You know, he trains a lot of the guys' sons down in Dallas because sons don't listen to their fathers.
Right.
But they'll listen to Charles. So you know, he's an incredible guy. He really is.
Okay, well, so we were talking about, you were very nice to talk to me before we came on the air, and we were talking about, you know, different time zones and how that involves your enjoyment after the game, and you were telling me, like, if you were on the West Coast,
it was better.
It was better.
Yeah.
Okay. Then if you were, so tell us the scenario of what happens. You know, because this is probably old hat to the Patriots, and you guys obviously had a lot of success. What happens if you're a Dallas Cowboy from the time you win until you're done celebrating?
Yeah, on the West Coast, it's great because everything starts a little bit earlier. So you know, when you get back, you know, from all the obligations you have after the game and you're showered and you're cleaned up, you still got time to get around your family and friends and celebrate. On the East Coast, it's different because, you know, you're usually doing it, you know, at the hotel. And a lot of the hotel areas for celebrating close down at midnight.
Right,
so you've got a very small window. So we had done California on the West Coast and had a really nice time after our victory over the Bills out in Pasadena. Then we came back the next year to Atlanta. And we got back to the hotel, and, you know, really the after party was kind of closing down, and there was, you know, the hotel was shutting everything down. We didn't really kind of think forward enough, so we really didn't have a lot of time to get around family and friends and celebrate. And then so when we went back to Tempe, Arizona, and it was going to be the same situation, Jerry actually went off property. And this was kind of a little bit of a thing from, you know, got out that, hey, isn't that the Dallas Post Party tent that's being built right now? They already think they're celebrating, and it's Wednesday.
Was that the Switzer one?
No. Yeah, it was. Yes,
okay,
yes,
that is the Switzer one.
So we had actually gone off property and had an area specifically built so we could, after the game, come back and spend some time with friends and family and celebrate the win.
That was like a new concept, because that now it's like, I mean, now it's standard.
Without a doubt. You kind of relied on other people to have a venue for you to use,
right.
But they've got you know, restrictions that they have to work through as well with you know, the ability to serve alcohol after a certain point.
Right. Did you have any situations where there were players during the week of the Super Bowl who maybe went out a little too much?
And, a little too excited.
Yeah, got a little too excited the week before, and it might have affected their game.
No, not at all. I did not see that at any one of the Super Bowls that we were blessed to be part of. And I credit Jimmy a lot to that. You know, when we got to the Super Bowl city, he kind of had a looser schedule. We all knew starting Wednesday morning, we were back into our routine. So,
okay. You
know, Monday, Tuesday, go out, enjoy the city, have some fun, celebrate. But when we come back in here Wednesday morning, we're on it. And the guys really respected that and followed through.
Did you guys know how good you going into the first one, did you guys know what you had?
No. No, I don't think a lot of people did. I think a lot of people still thought it was San Francisco.
Yeah.
You know, because we were underdogs going out in that championship game. And I'll tell people, that is still, in my opinion, the best game that group played together as a team was the first championship game out in Candlestick. I think a lot of people don't realize we were +4. In turnover ratio that day, and we're still hanging on at the end of that game to win it. We had to have the big play to Alvin Harper down the field to kind of get that last touchdown. You know, San Francisco was coming back. We jumped out 30-20, but they're coming back, and we had to hold on there at the end. So I really feel that was one of the best games, if not the best game.
Do you guys as a group feel like you left championships on the table?
Well, I think there's some things. I think we all, you know, I think, you know, obviously New England's going to look back and say, geez, those two teams against the Giants, how do we not close those out? Because they're so good at closing things out.
Okay,
there's nobody better.
Let's talk about Switzer. So you have Jimmy Johnson as a coach, and the culture, obviously, how much does the culture change with Switzer coming in? And do you think that affected kind of when you look back and you think we could have won more?
Well, I don't think it's all Barry's fault. It's just a different style of management of the team. Jimmy was very, you know, kind of a heavy-handed disciplinarian style. Barry Switzer wanted to allow us as men to be able to make the right decision, and we had a lot of guys on our team that sometimes couldn't make the right decision. So, you know, I think we missed the discipline that Jimmy provided, and when you take that away, and you have guys that are pushing the envelope to see how far they can get before there's accountability, you're going to have some issues. And I think that happened. And the other part is, you know, we were a team that was coming down the backside. We had a lot of injuries during Barry's time, and I don't think a lot of people get that. We were the youngest team in the NFL in 92 when we won our first one. So in 95 and 96, you know, that's 4 or 5 years later, you know, we were beat up pretty good. You know, my neck was coming along, then Michael's neck, and Chant Hennings is out. We had a number of guys that were key players through those years that really the injury bug started to take a toll on. So our roster really changed. And don't forget about free agency. Free agency came into play in 94. So we started to lose a Kevin Gogan, a John Gizek, all our secondary. The great thing about those teams is the depth. We had so much depth on that team because Jimmy did such a good job at drafting and bringing the guys in. Once free agency started, we couldn't sign our backup guys that could go and be starters at other teams. We lost Dave Wannstedt, Norv Turner, Tony Wise. You know, our coaching staff was getting picked apart. Our roster was getting picked apart. So Barry was functioning with a completely different set of guys in 95-96 than Jimmy had in 92-93.
What are the people in Dallas think of Jerry Jones right now? Because, I mean, this is obviously somebody who, you know, is responsible for the greatness of the Cowboys. At the same time, you look at the teams that have been put together since, you know, what, the past, how many years? Been like, forever since they've been
23 since they've been in a championship.
Jerry
one
should
playoff,
hire
I mean, what, one playoff game in, what, the last, like, 15 years?
It's two playoff wins.
So, what are people in Dallas, at what point do you go, all right, maybe we get a GM in here, somebody else? Like, have they lost any patience for Jerry Jones?
I think they've lost patience, not with just Jerry, but just everything that you just talked about, there's frustration with the fan base because the success is never sustained. It's up and down. It's 4-12, 13-3, 9-7, 13-3. You know, kind of bounces around. They're not on that steady progression. And there's some reasons why, but, you know, there was frustration this year. They made some, they probably made the most significant changes in the staff than they have in the last, you know, 5 to 8 years this season. You know, there's talk of the offense kind of shifting a little bit, and we're now we heard this whole thing Romo friendly back in 09, and now we're starting to hear Dak friendly. We're gonna have a Dak friendly offense. Well, really what that is, and it was the same thing with Romo, it's getting the right pieces in place around Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Now that happened in about 2014 when DeMarco Murray ran for 1845 and had 13 touchdowns. Dez was 1350 receiving and 16 touchdowns. You had Witten, who was a solid tight end. You get people around and the team does well. They've got to get people around Dak. And without Ezekiel in the lineup for 16 weeks as a big play threat, we don't, you know, a little bit of struggle with Dez on the outside, you know, making the plays that he was. They really took Cole Beasley away this year. So really right now the frustration with the fan base is, I think, more about consistency. Because we watch a team like New England. New England's there every year.
Right.
You know, why are we just riding this emotional roller coaster from season to season? We can't stack a winning season on top of another one. So I think a lot of that frustration from our fan base comes from the inconsistency from season to season.
We're talking to Daryl Moose Johnson. Now, the ratings have dipped a little in the NFL, and I believe there's reasons for that, like the overuse of instant replay, when is a catch.
Too many games,
like the minutia. If you could fix the league, if you do think it needs to be fixed, but if you could improve the league, what are some things that you would suggest?
I would like to see the NFL be much more proactive with some of the issues that you're talking about. You know, we talked about ratings coming into this year, and a lot of people went back and they looked at the election last year, and some of the debates were placed on the, you know, the Monday nights, and there were some things that tied into it, and they tried to, you know, to show us, you know, the beginning of the season this year, we're going to show everybody that we're back on track with the ratings. Well, then they have another issue with the anthem. So why would you go from 2016 to 2017 without some closure on what your policy is going to be with that? And I hope that they do that this year. It looks like they're doing it. They continue to have talks with Doug Baldwin and Lorenzo Alexander and some of the guys that are on that side that are working with the social injustices in their communities. I'd like to see that to continue and to have some kind of solid understanding of when the season starts next year. This is what our expectations are. This is what we're going to do to help you and your communities to get that message out. And in return, we would want you to stand for the anthem. Let's just put this all to bed right now so both sides have a win. I'd like to see the NFL become much more proactive in the discussion about TBI and CTE and everything that's going on in that arena right now, because I know the NFL has invested a lot of money in this issue, but we never really seem to hear their medical data. We don't hear their side of the story, and we're hearing other groups who are also involved in this area, and we're hearing their voices more. I would like to see the NFL be much more proactive in that arena, because I get around, especially this time of year out at Super Bowl cities, you get around the retired players, you get around their wives, and they're really scared, they're really nervous about this, and I think if the NFL was to present their information that they have, I think it would ease a lot of the concerns. So for me, it's just being more proactive, gaining control back with your product. I think that that right now that they don't have control on a lot of the issues that we talk about.
Do you see former teammates and friends suffering post-football?
I don't. And that's one of the things that makes me want the NFL to be more proactive there. You know, I'd sit down with Roger Staubach. He's sharp as a tack. You know, are there some guys that are struggling a little bit? Yeah. Yeah, but let's not, you know, is it just football? You know, we're talking about guys that came from a different generation where pain meds and steroids were a part of the daily life of the football player. And there's some studies out that say that the pathology with steroid abuse and prescription drugs and especially painkiller abuse can mimic some of the pathologies that we see with what's going on with these guys. So listen, we all admit something's going on. We want to know exactly what it is. And right now we're not really finding out exactly what it is. And we don't have any information to extend out, you know, longitudinally. We don't have enough information yet to go out and say something definitive.
Do you fear for your own health at all?
No. I stay up on the topic. I do everything I can. I exercise, which is the best thing you can do because it creates the blood flow and the brain barriers. You know, I do anything from a nutritional standpoint that is supposed to be beneficial to brain health. I have a concern, you know, because of the position I played, but I do everything I can proactively to keep ahead of that curve.
So I do none of that. And that's the way I am.
All right, so what brings you here? What do you got going?
I'm working with the people from Liberty Tax. We did a little campaign back in November. We were trying to get people to get their game plan together then so they could file early, so they could get their return early. We had some success with that. So now we're coming back here at Super Bowl, and we're going to try to incentivize them again to get that game plan with your taxes done. I think we all thought it was going to be a little bit simpler this year, but obviously that's not going to kick in until next year, so why not go to somebody at Liberty Tax. Let a professional do this for you. So if you do that, if you go file with Liberty Tax and you use the hashtag Liberty Tax Double, we're going to have a little bit of a contest. We want you to shoot out a tweet that says what you would do if Liberty Tax doubled your tax refund up to $2,500, or actually gave you the money that you were going to owe the government up to $2,500. What would you do with that? And we're going to pick two winners from that category. And what I really, really like about what Ed has done, the CEO of the company, in November we tied it into a charitable incentive as well, and we're doing that again. Every time you send out a tweet about what you would do with your refund or the money that Liberty Tax would give to you, it's going to trigger a donation to the USO. And we're going to send some money over to the USO as well.
Excellent. So. Sounds great. Yeah, well, great. Daryl Moose Johnson, it's a pleasure, sir. Thank you so much for the
good
time.
Luck on Sunday. Good luck on Sunday. And yeah. I have to let you know, for selfish reasons, I'm cheering for my division rivals, the Eagles.
Really?
Yeah. See, so, I can't have you guys win three Super Bowls in 4 years twice.
Because it diminishes everything.
It diminishes
you've done.
Everything. That
right. Completely takes it away.
Completely selfish.
Right.
That's
100%
right.
Now.
Okay. That's right.
It diminishes everything.
Hey, thank you so much for the time.
Much,
we really do appreciate
greatness
it.
Greatness is never embraced in our society.
That's right. That's right. And that's why I'm here. All right. John Wallach with the headlines. We'll be right back.
From the food court at Mall of America, Toucher and Rich, presented by Plymouth Rock Assurance on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Sports Hub headlines.
Oh, feel headset there.
.985, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. And I am making mistakes with everyone's name today. Called Gerald Johnson, Daryl Johnson, Daryl Johnston, Daryl Johnston a million times.
It's still early for us. We're on East Coast time.
Yeah,
there,
so all right. Mike Sherman, you know him best for his work with the Green Bay Packers, where he was very successful. And he had a quarterback over there by name of Brett Favre. And he is sort of the anti-Brady in a way, in that Brady is very methodical, and Favre kind of just hucks it around. Was that frustrating as a coach at all, to have a quarterback that kind of...
Was a gunslinger.
Yeah, the kind of gunslinger mentality. Yeah.
Well, not when those passes ended up in the end zone in our favor. It wasn't, which happened a number of times.
Sure.
But, there was some tough times, obviously, when interceptions came at the wrong time. But Brett being Brett, he always wanted the opportunity to come back and make another throw, and then he would get you back on track again. So a great player, fun to coach, practiced as hard as he played the game. It was an honor to coach the guy.
I've always wondered what people who coach at that level think of guys like Bill Belichick. When you see him, do you ever look at him and try to analyze and figure out what he's doing that you did, or what he's doing right that you see a little bit of yourself in him, or what you could have changed? Like, how does a someone who's coached to that level view a guy like Bill Belichick?
Well, I think he's held in very, very high esteem, obviously, for what he's accomplished in his career. I think the strength of Bill Belichick is the consistency and the accountability that he holds within the organization to everybody.
Why can't anyone duplicate that? I guess that's the big question.
I think stability has something to do with it. The people have to hang in with people long enough where they can get to that point where every single person, from the janitor to the ticket lady to the guy that passes out the jocks, they all understand this is how it's done, and it's no, if you don't do it this way, you're gone. Mm-hmm. So I think that he's implemented what he wants in the New England system, and it's been so successful. People will try and have tried to emulate it, but Bill Belichick does it his way, and I don't think people can become Bill Belichick. He does it his way, and I think he's steadfast, and I think he's committed, and I think he stays on it consistently and never gives up. A lot of times during the course of an NFL season, the length of it and all, people get worn down, but I don't think Bill gets worn down. I think he gets geared up, and he stays on top of every little detail, and that's hard to do.
Now, you mentioned the consistency of the organization, and we all know Belichick has it as he wants it. We've heard the days of staying around until 1 in the morning are kind of gone. He has people in place, but he's losing his offensive and defensive coordinators this year. There is someone that is in the organization that can step up and definitely be defensive coordinator. But how much do you think that's going to hurt the team, if at all?
Well, I think that he obviously is losing good, they're losing good people and have the ability to replace good people. His system is he always has someone in place that's been there and done that and has watched and learned, and he elevates from within, which is a tremendous motivation for those younger coaches to be with him and give him everything they got. So I personally don't think they'll miss a beat. Brady's still there, and he'll be there for the next 4 years, and I think that's another coach in the field that's going to continue to implement their offense.
How does Tom Brady's new method of working out that's all about stretches and being pliable and things like that differ from the way they used to do it back in the day?
Well, I tell you, when we used to do stretching at Green Bay, Brett would sit there, and I'd have to go up to him and says, and everybody's stretching, he'd just sit, be on a knee on the grass, and I'd say, well, no, it's not stretching today. He says, Mike, he says, you ever see a cat stretch before it chases a mouse?
So he's just like, I'm not doing it.
So how do you answer that?
I said, are you the cat or the mouse?
You got to lead.
I don't think he ever stretched 1 second in his life.
You got to lead by example.
but when the first horn rang for practice, he was full go and did everything. Yeah, everything you asked him to do.
But that's interesting because he's really the closest person that you can draw a comparison to Brady as far as longevity
yeah.
and playing, at that position. And you have two complete opposite methods of getting there. I mean, obviously the success with Brady's, we all know what that's been. But do you when you look at what Brady's doing, the guys in the locker room, like back in the day with like the way, it's completely different. Like, is it not?
Yeah, would you like that? There's rumors of, well, there's not rumors, is that, Brady has this guru named Guerrero and this TB12 facility that's right by where they practice, and there's some frustration in the organization about Brady doing his training over there and, maybe
getting other players to subscribe to his type of workouts instead of the ones that are approved by the team.
Right, exactly. Would that be a problem if you were head coach?
I can understand the frustration. You want to have control over your players and what's going on with your players, who you're paying. Just like when they have surgery, you kind of want to know what doctor's doing the surgery and have some input into that because, you're paying them a lot of money to perform at a high level, and you want to have a part of the decision making. But I can see how that could be a little bit frustrating, but if it was just Brady, I think that people would give him a free pass on that, because Brady is so disciplined and so into his body and getting to play as long as he possibly can. But I think when other people maybe go over there, it might get a little bit fuzzy.
Well, okay, so Josh McDaniels, Matt Patricia, both about to step into brand new jobs. They got a whole new scenario that they're in. When you first showed up as the coach of the Packers, what did you, like, when you were the guy, when you became the man, what advice would you give them for their first day on the job?
Well, I worked for Mike Holmgren, a great coach, learned a lot from Mike. And I would just say this, you have to be yourself. You can't be that iconic coach that you coached with. You have to be exactly who you are because players will figure out who you are. Mm-hmm. And if you're not the real person you say, if you're not the person where you're trying to be somebody that you're not, Bill Belichick has, as a head coach, the greatest record of all time. So how can you be him
yeah.
until you start winning games and winning championships? You can't. And so my recommendation would simply be yourself. and that's good enough. And both men are good people and great coaches, and those players need to see who they are, not who Bill Belichick was.
All right, Mike Sherman, what brings you out here today?
You do. See if you can pronounce my name right.
All right. No need to take shots. You don't know me like that.
Well, we're all from Boston. We all know everybody.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. You are from Boston.
Norwood, right?
Oh, I was born in Norwood and grew up in Hyde Park. Yeah. And then we end up in Northborough later on in my lifetime.
You went to Boston Latin, I'm told.
Went to Boston Latin, then went to Algonquin Regional High School out in Northborough. Yeah.
All right. So he's a local guy. Obviously a big fan of the show.
Obviously.
What brings you out here today?
Well, you know, I was asked to be a part of this innovative, groundbreaking tech company that is a sports tech company that is putting together, has put together for the last 4 or 5 years, this app where fans can be more closely connected to the game. And the way they're connected is they're allowed an opportunity to call plays, live plays. The game's being played live. They call the play. It goes up to a satellite, comes back to the coach's sideline, and the play is called in the game. If it's a successful play, then they get points for it. If it's unsuccessful, they lose points. But it's kind of like John Madden, but only with live players.
Wow.
The fun part for me and other coaches, I have a lot of NFL coaches who are either out of jobs or retired who are working it, and it's going to be a developmental camp. There'll be 100 players, two teams, and it's a developmental camp to try to get these young guys back into the National Football League or Canada or wherever they may end up. So it serves two purposes. It's developmental for those players. They're going to be paid to work at this camp. It's going to be three weeks of preseason, three games. And then there's this tech side, which we're going to release the app in April, and fans can actually call plays in the game, something they've never done. And I'm in a position to be the Monday morning quarterback as opposed to them, instead of them.
Get a little revenge.
Yeah, a little revenge. Yeah. All right. So I'm looking forward to it.
Hold on one thing. I'm supposed to ask. My boss just gave me this. I'm supposed to ask you about skipping school and go to the Red Sox game?
Yeah, I don't know where he got that, but yeah, when I was at Boston Latin, I didn't skip school. I skipped the last part of school.
Ah.
And
which is why I tell my kids.
Yes, exactly.
Skip the unimportant
50%
part
of the day is good enough.
Yeah, I get you there, and the Red Sox are playing, and we get over there about 2 o'clock, and the bleacher tickets, I'm embarrassed to say, were 75 cents back then.
Oh, jeez.
And I was there recently, and not 75 cents anymore.
No, they're not.
But, yeah, we used to do that. It's part of the education process. You know?
I see.
Absolutely. Well, Mike Sherman, thank you so much for the time.